class meeting. At PGIPT, actually we have two ongoing projects, and these projects are performed by former and current interns. We have an in-house project, business continuity planning. To gather more information on this project, please contact Landon Morey. Secondly, another project is ancient civilization web application development. This project is heading towards coding. So to have more information on this project, please contact Angelia Robinet. Today, we have a list of presenters with interesting topics. So I guess our presenters are ready to go. Shall we start with Austin Mumford?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. Awesome. Let's see if I could share this. All right. You guys see my screen?
Yes, we can see your screen.
Okay. Awesome. So this is my masterclass presentation of augmented reality and vehicles by myself, Austin Mumford. In this presentation, we will discuss augmented reality in cars, boats, and aircrafts. What is augmented reality? Augmented reality is when there's computer-generated information that is commonly done through phones and augmented reality glasses. Augmented reality is mainly overlays of content on the real world. How is virtual reality different than mixed reality? Virtual reality is basically just a completely different place in the real world, a virtual environment. And then mixed reality is the use of virtual reality environment with augmented reality overlays. Some examples of virtual reality are Oculus headset and Samsung VR. While these are both pretty advanced, augmented reality is being implemented in all different types of ways. The future of augmented reality is very bright. Augmented reality applications. So some applications, there's different applications of augmented reality, and it's growing in all different types of fields. Augmented reality is used quite a bit in all types of training, including medical training, fighter pilots, classrooms, military training, and even police training. Some average uses that me and you will use are IKEA Place, which is basically where it's an application on your phone and you can display a couch in your room. If you haven't used it, it's really cool. I would use it. And then Pokemon Go, which was big in like 2016. It shows the augmented Pokemon character around you. And then some Snapchat filters can also be augmented reality depending on what they are. So now we know what augmented reality is and how it is different from virtual reality and some applications of it. What we're going to cover now is augmented reality inside of vehicles, cars, boats, planes, and even fighter jets. Augmented reality in cars. So this is the picture of the Mercedes-Benz EQS. And it's basically just showing the time, it's showing the speed limit, cruise control, lane assist, and then steering assist, and then like, I guess the arrow of where you're supposed to go. So usually augmented reality is kind of just using luxury brand cars nowadays. I'm sure it'll get implemented more. This display will get implemented more in all different types of cars in the future. But it really doesn't show much other than the speed. They keep it pretty minimalistic. I assume that they don't want to make it overbearing to where it can distract the person from driving. And then the Audi is working with augmented reality in their new vehicle. And we'll watch a video on that. But they basically use augmented reality glasses for the driving experience to be enhanced. That's the way it was described from my research. It's not completely implemented and the car is not fully out yet. But you could do things like changing the temperature, changing music, seeing the map, car details, and you can see all that through augmented reality glasses. So yes, augmented reality is very cool. And in cars, it's a great concept. But I assume that if it becomes overbearing and we are still driving and not self-driving, we don't have self-driving cars, that it can cause many accidents and it can distract drivers from people around them. To me, the future application in boats and jets seem more applicable than in a car. But again, if we go towards a self-driving, it makes more sense for us to have more overlays in our vehicles. All right, so now we're going to watch a video about the Audi Active Sphere. We're going to watch a short part of the video. Basically, this guy gets flown out somewhere to see what the Audi's working on and what their new car, their concept of a car. And part of the video we're going to focus on is just the augmented reality part. So, you guys, can you guys hear it?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
You guys, I'm not entirely sure. This is crazy. I see a huge map in front of me, different geographical data, heavy rain. This is pretty cool. It's like navigation, but at the same time, it maps out where the rain is. It's points of interest. If I go up to the top right here, this is my music selection. All I do is hover like that, you see? And if I keep my finger on one of the songs, like that, augmented realities, if I go like this and choose a different song, such as Point of Interest, boom, it comes up. It's actually awesome. That's your navigation right there. Now for my climate control, you see there, I just put my hand, hovers up, and now I can change the temperature. I can actually move it left, make it colder, or turn it right, make it warmer. And it's actually super responsive. This is great. That is cool. So now the augmented reality also changes to driver mode, where I can put my hands here, I believe, and you see how now I get kind of like a gauge cluster, speedometer, tire pressure. This is cool.
All right, so that's kind of what the car looks like. It looks really cool. But yeah, like I said earlier, like it's very cool as a concept, but it may be a driving hazard, especially with this car and all the cool things you can do. I'm sure I'll get distracted by trying to pick a song, and I'll probably get in a wreck if I'm driving this car. But again, in the future, if there's more of a focus on self-driving cars, then I feel like this would be more applicable. Oops. Yeah. All right. So now we're going to talk about augmented reality in boats. So augmented reality in boats is not completely used by ship navigation. There is a company that puts cameras in front of some boats and yachts, and it shows icons of buoys and other ships and how far places are, wind, other applications. You can see in this video or in this picture, you can see that's, I guess, the name of the boat and then how far he has to go. And then I guess another distance. And then I guess that's a little sailboat. So you could see that it's a very cool concept. It could probably help, you know, maybe not boat wrecks. I don't know how often that is, but I'm sure it could stop some. But I know that this certain company that is implementing this is having issues with identifying items and incorrectly identifying things. So I know that it's not perfect. And again, not really many people use it in their boats because it's not really applicable. But I know nowadays it is being used in studies and training. So a lot of there's this big company that's doing it. They're using a mixed reality where they're basically in a virtual reality world and seeing how augmented reality can be applied through their ships. So basically like help captains see underwater rocks, icebergs, directions of where to go, even more ways of being studied. It's usually just overlays for the captain to see. So that's kind of how it's being used now. But again, this is nowadays what it's being used. But in the future, I'm sure it'll be much, much more advanced. So now we're going to discuss the heads up displays in aircraft. Now, this isn't exactly virtual reality or augmented reality. Sorry, this isn't exactly augmented reality because it is just like transparent information. It's not overlaying digital information into the environment. So a lot of people get this confused. This is with fighter pilots, and really any military aircraft has these where it has the screen of the altitude and the distance and how high they are and, you know, stuff like that. The wind speed, I know that's on there as well. These are used, again, in almost every aircraft by either screens or the helmets like that they wear. So you could see from this on this screen, the purple part is where this is showing, the green part is showing. But I know a lot of fighter pilots, since they don't have as many things to obstruct their view, they have it directly in their helmet. So they have that in their helmet, and that's kind of what it looks like through it. And we will go over, Red 6 Advanced Tactical Augmented Reality System. Again, HUDs or heads up display is not the same as augmented reality. This is what was a short video about augmented reality.
All clear.
We've got a big mission ahead of us today.
We do. You're going to see a lot of things no one's ever seen in the sky before.
His call sign is Rebel. And here, just beyond the Hoover Dam, he's going to fly me into a dogfight with a Chinese fighter jet. Well, sort of.
This is unreal.
Before takeoff, Rebel, a.k.a. Major Brandon Harris, prepared me for this unreal experience.
Am I the goose to your Maverick?
You are. Except for the bad part.
Rebel is a reservist with the Air Force, but also a test pilot for Red 6, an augmented reality company working with the Air Force to train fighter pilots. To see it firsthand, I had to suit up Top Gun style.
Two hands here.
And get into the back of this Bearcoot 540. But one thing Maverick didn't have, this augmented reality device inside my helmet that can project combat scenarios using artificial intelligence as we fly. Like when suddenly a Chinese J-20 engages us and our wingman and the F-18 there. This video shows what I was seeing in that moment.
Stakes are high. We're in a Bearcoot, but I think we got this.
Digital images laid over our real-world environment.
Right side, you see it? There it goes. Let's keep going. Let's turn around. All right, I'm going to get a weapons lock. I see the weapons lock. And Fox 2, high up force like Fox 2, and splash the J-20.
We emerge unscathed, but not always the case. More service members die in training than in combat, according to a recent congressional report.
When you're operating at those speeds in dynamic environments like that, accidents happen. Well, now there's nothing to bump into, so we can get exactly the same training, actually much better training, at a fraction of the cost.
The system also allows pilots to practice maneuvers that would otherwise be impossible.
I'm going to shoot some surface-to-air missiles at us, okay? So
you're about to try to kill us.
I'm about to try to kill us.
Like dodging surface-to-air missiles or landing on an aircraft carrier, creating an ocean in the middle of the Nevada desert.
I literally felt like we were landing and we were in the air.
The Air Force has invested up to $70 million in a contract with Red 6 as they face a growing pilot shortage.
Training has always been the key to America's success in the air.
Retired Air Force General Mike Holmes directed combat training and now sits on the board of Red 6.
What do you think this technology will mean to the men and women serving in our Air Force?
I think it will mean that they can be better trained, they can be trained faster, and at lower cost to the taxpayer.
Do you think it could save lives?
I know it will save lives.
A potentially life-saving program that's just getting started.
Like next time you see it, it's going to be even better.
Woo! We made it!
Dasha Burns, above Boulder City, Nevada.
All right, so that is Red 6, the company's Advanced Tactical Augmented Reality System, or ATARS. That is in a nutshell of what it is. We'll discuss it.
Thanks for watching.
After we discuss how it's used or how augmented reality is used in regular planes. So regular planes, it's not really used that much. It's really just for the projections of how to lift off in the air. It's more used in training than anything. I know older pilots definitely don't use it. Newer pilots, from my research, some of them do use it. But again, it's very rare. And this is the only application I have found that is used in the commercial planes. But Red 6, so that to me is so cool. I was trying to figure out how augmented reality is used. I came across that and it was like very cool concept that they're trying to implement. And I know that it, like they said, it will most likely save lives, because I know that people do die from training accidents all the time in aircrafts. So basically just like seeing the display of other aircrafts and then being able to land, it can help them, you know, avoid those potential accidents or even damage to the equipment in the military and save the military a bunch of money. which in turn saves the taxpayers money. So again, many government contracting companies are implementing augmented reality into their training, and the Air Force is implementing this into their training as well. I know, like she said, they do have a contract with Red 6. I think it's increased from $70 billion. I think it's a little bit more than that. I think it's like 100 or something along the lines, because it's gotten a little bit more advanced since then. This video was in 2023, early 2023. So yeah, it's getting better and better as of right now. So in conclusion, augmented reality is overlays of digital information on the real world. We discussed some applications of it used by regular everyday people like you and me, like Pokemon Go and IKEA Place. We then discussed how it's different from mixed reality and virtual reality. We also went over augmented reality in cars and what it looks like now in more luxury brands like the Mercedes EQS or the new Audi ActiveSphere, which is a concept and may not even be released. And then we talked about the boat application of augmented reality and how it can be used more and how it's being studied and researched now. And then my favorite part about this whole thing was the Red 6 ATARS. I thought that was the coolest thing about augmented reality being implemented in vehicles. And I think that it's going to get more advanced and it's going to get even cooler than what it is now. And that is it. Are there any questions about that? Yes.
Jayden. Have you ever made an augmented reality program, or do you have any interest in doing it?
I've never made one, but I think it'd be interesting. Yeah.
Okay. You can use Unity to make augmented reality programs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. I might check that out. That sounds cool. Thank you. No questions? No more? All right. Well, thank you all for your time and listening to my presentation. My name is Austin Mumford. I hope you all have a great night. And here are my references as well. If you want to check out the videos, I believe it's the Red 6. You can find it. Just look up Red 6 augmented reality. And then the other guys, I think it's Supercar Blondie on YouTube. But yeah, Supercar Blondie right here. So, all right. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you, Austin Mumford. It was a really interesting topic. So our next presenter is Flonko Diba. Did I pronounce it correctly?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Let me share my screen. Sorry. Can you guys see my screen?
Yes, we can see your screen.
Okay. All right. Good evening. My name is Flonko. Today I'm going to be talking about the impact of big data and how it shapes our business strategies. The impact of big data in shaping business strategies agendas will focus on how businesses can benefit from big data, and how customers understand the behavior of access data, predictive analysis, analysis of big data, and development of data governance. The evolution technology of big data agents have made data more accessible than before. The data even referred to as big data has become crucial an element in shaping marketing strategies. Big data refers to the vast amount of structured and unstructured data that businesses can use to improve decision making and process. For example, how we can make assumptions about data we process at a given time to serve the purpose of the users and consumers. Understanding consumers' behavior. The data business collected come from consumers' helps in decision making, but the question here is how do we recognize such opportunities? That is, to have well-trained data analytics who can provide real-time data report to consumers' need rather than depending on third-party organizations. The diagram model above serves as and explains how to utilize the tools to improve the quality of services. In theory, consumers' behaviors reside, that is the ACIS model proposed by Dentons company, is most suitable for analyzing consumers' behavior. Choices in the area of network economy, according to the theory of consumers, go through 5 stages in coming into contact with a product or services and information, then finally completing the purchase, which is A, action, interest, search, action, then share. It is developed according to the traditions, that is the AIDMA mode. On the other hand, both of them describe series of behavioral changes in the process of consumer selections. The difference of the AICIS is the S, network characteristic, which serves as the share that have been added, which reflects the importance of search in the internet area. Instead of ultimately transforming information and inputting ideas to consumers, which highlights the influence of the internet on people's life and consumption behavior, construction consumers' behavior. Access data needs. Data access need is crucial as it helps businesses to know the type of data consumers need. The graph below illustrates the yearly report data generations is currently skyrocketing and with every year is increasing more. We are seeing the figures reach heights. Data centers will increase across the globe and the question here is how can businesses rely on data centers? What if the data centers are hacked and breached can cause effect and reputations of organizations? A good practice would be to depend on data centers, but rather explore other options to protect the data integrity and not to only use the data for business strategies. Predictive analysis. Big data is also plays a critical role in predictive analysis. A technique used to predict future trends and behavior by analyzing data, businesses can focus on future customers' behavior and marketing trends and potential risk. And this prediction can help plan their marketing strategies more effective and stay ahead of the competition. There are challenges, though, that businesses should consider for big data to work effectively, which I will talk about in the next slide. Challenges of big data. The following challenges can be concerned. Technical issues may be the easiest challenges to recognize, but the user side challenges deserves attention too, and one of the biggest is lack of big data experience. Making sense of big data and managing its supporting infrastructure requires skills, and which is lacking in many organizations. One of the solutions is rather than focusing on outside hires, foster data and telling people, why don't we just have people who can work within those data and make a difference in the world? As organizations collect and analyze vast amounts of data, they become attractive targets for cyber criminals. This can lead to a variety of cyber attacks like debit card fraud, phishing, ransomware, and more. One of the solutions will be to employ a multiple-layer security approach, ensuring data is protected in each stage during the collection, processing, storage, and transmission. This includes the use of encryptions, firewalls, secure access, and controls. The consequences of using data for poor quality can range from minor to disastrous. It can result in the loss of income, employees quitting, and frustrations among the globe, and even painful monetary fines. And there are several potential consequences, such as loss of income, losing clients, will also have a negative impact in the revenue of the organization. Gartner recently discovered many businesses lose thousands of dollars each year as a result of loss of productivity. Streaming from poor data quality is considered responsible for costing organizations an average of $15 billion per year. Big data integrations refers to combining data from multiple separate business systems into a single unified view to process and generate insight. Enterprises should consider how data is stored. It's not just enough to store and collect data in cloud servers. This information must be readily available for quick retrieval, ideally through available system whenever needed. Data governance and policies. Data governance refers to this set of rules, processes, and policies and tools which ensure proper data quality throughout the data life and proper data usage across the organizations. Data governance allows users to find and prepare use and trusted data centers, data sets on their own without relying on IT. The primary benefit of data governance is providing the high quality data necessary for data analytics and the business intelligence tools. The insight gained from these tools results in better business decisions and improved performance. Developing data governance framework. The main data frameworks are people, process, and technology. For people governance program, you should consider things like roles, steering committees that is made up of the chief of data officers and other head of IT and the executives of each business unit. These groups of sets of usage policy standards and the governance team, on the other hand, led by data governance managers, and those teams implement and maintain the systems and tools. The data stewards, those are the team managers, and the data sets are responsible for the enforcement of rules and the day-to-day needs of the business. The process, that's the other part of it, that you'll need to have formal process that are the activities to ensure consistent executions and enforcement of the usage of policies and data standards set by steering committees. And finally, the technology part of it will focus on the tools and techniques to maintain and manage the security integrity, lineage, usability, and availability of data. With efficient data policies, will enable cyber security professionals to keep up quality data management by monitoring and controlling data privacy of its users. All right, and I will thank Purdue University and the team to give me this opportunity to have this time to make this presentation. And special thanks go to the Vice President also for giving me the heads up to do the presentation today. And that's it for me today. And I'll be graduating on the 23rd any questions or comments.
Thank you, Flonko.
Thank you.
Do you guys have any questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you for presenting.
Thank you.
Our next presenter is Jacob Hills. Are you ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready. Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Fantastic. Okay. All right. Can everyone see that?
Yes, we can see this.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so today I'll be talking about Project Silica and whether threat obsolescence is possible. So good evening, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to join me tonight as I talk about new technologies and my opinions on them. Tonight, I will be discussing Project Silica, a research effort by Microsoft to innovate in the field of long-term storage offerings. I will also be speaking about some of the bigger impacts of a technology like this, and finishing with my opinions as a student studying both cybersecurity and cloud computing. Given that I am dedicated to a lifetime of learning, I hope that this presentation also serves as an intro to how I believe we can better serve others in our professional capacity by being ceaselessly inquisitive. So something I would like you all to keep in mind as I present is whether threat obsolescence is possible. My question is vague, but I'm confident that by the end, I'll be able to ask this in a bit of a different way. Now, I would like to start with ransomware. This form of malware is a growing issue in cybersecurity. Honeywell, a respected voice in the IT security sphere, says that these types of attacks will only become more common. And I think that the past few years alone have made it difficult to sort of miss that trend with companies like MGM, Boeing, and Lycan, along with government entities like the City of Dallas, the State of Maine, and the U.S. Marshals Service. A study found that 80% of those affected by ransomware paid the ransom, and then a startling 68% were targeted again in the following months, with attackers demanding an even higher ransom. This almost always leads to a cycle of growing costs that are difficult to keep up with. There are ways to analyze this ransomware and other forms of malware with the goal of protecting against it. One method that I am most familiar with is the use of YAR rules, which were created to inspect malware and analyze it and see kind of where it comes from based off a number of comparisons made between it and malware used in other attacks. This can be used to see if it was used by a different hacking group or possibly a state actor as well. These open source rules can be a great tool, especially when they are integrated into a defense-in-depth security approach. These rules are also evidence of the information security field being one of elevated collaboration and sharing common goals, which often focus a lot on protecting users. But unfortunately, a lot of this collaboration and goodwill can be undone, oftentimes by a single user that falls victim to phishing. And Microsoft seems to have a solution to this, and it's made of glass. Their concept hopes to make it impossible for ransomware to affect archived data while also saving on cost and making data immortal. Ransomware aside, it is also possible for this technology to assist in other fields, such as genome research, storing medical information and media, financial metadata, and other sectors that require very vast amounts of storage. Additionally, Traditional storage mediums are struggling to keep up with the demand of today. Currently, it is projected that we will only continue to create more and more data that needs to be stored. And within the next decade, this will amount to hundreds of zettabytes, or for scale, hundreds of trillions of gigabytes of data. This matter of preserving who we are as a species requires longer term solutions than what we have now, which in best case scenarios requires a migration of data every 5 to 7 years. This is found in the use of magnetic storage, such as tapes or disks, which are fairly cost effective now. But if we look at this cost efficiency over so many decades, then we begin to see a bigger impact with regards to sustainability and overhead. These current forms of storage are also very susceptible to numerous forms of tampering and degradation, from things like solar flares to EMPs and natural decay. Tape and disk storage also requires a significant amount of energy to maintain properly. For example, disk storage, like the one in the middle here, has to be spun up and maintain a certain RPM so it can be accessed properly. This then requires a significant amount of cooling as they begin to spin and heat up once they attain that certain RPM. Altogether, there is a lot of money and a lot of resources focused just on the maintenance of this technology. And over just a few years, we begin to see a trend that is very unsustainable. So here on the slide, we can see these popular forms of magnetic storage with a tape storage, HDD or hard disk drive, with a couple disks here. What I was speaking of primarily was had to do with this form in the middle. For example, these disks here spin at very high speeds and create a lot of heat. And then another form of storage that I didn't include here, but is still fairly popular, are SSDs, which face a similar type of heating issue, which is also addressed by Project Silica. So glass, on the other hand, does not cost a lot to manufacture, and it can last centuries once it is written to and stored. Also, the glass is not affected by EMPs or solar flares, offering a safe and low-cost alternative to magnetic storage. This technology is also known as worm media, or write once, read many, which ideally means that the data cannot be compromised at all, even in the presence of malicious intent, such as ransomware. And then Microsoft is also looking at an air gap by design approach, where only platters that are already written to can enter their library or their archive, which this archive does not possess any form of writing technology. So therefore, it also becomes physically impossible for already written data to be altered in any way. So to put this into perspective, a single pane of glass today is as dense as a CD. It can fit in the palm of your hand and offers 7 terabytes of storage. Now, as these become denser, they could hold upwards of hundreds of terabytes of data. On this slide, we have a proof of concept where Warner Brothers collaborated with Microsoft to store the entire original Superman movie onto a single glass platter. It still kind of boggles my mind every time I see this photo, how an entire movie can fit in that lady's hand just like that. And this type of media is also offers faster access and requires no cooling, given that glass does not have to be spun up, but instead it simply just has to be pulled off the shelf. Then it's just scanned and decoded, turning analog into digital, which is realized almost entirely with machine learning. And then more on that later. So another system that Microsoft plans to use to speed up reading operations is the use of crabbing drones that fetch these glass platters. Traditionally, this fetching is done by a very clunky gantry system that can only access a handful of disks at a time. With this newer and faster technology, data centers are able to deliver data faster. In the future, I believe this could also lead to a reduced time frame in successful data recovery and business continuity plans. And on this side, we see a couple of these grabbers at work flying across the shelf and retrieving different glass platters. Fantastic. Now, another question is, where does this leave consumers? So creating this type of technology and manufacturing it to the scale required for profitability cannot be found everywhere. While this level of manufacturing is an advantage of an economy of scale, it is also a way to remove the chance to enjoy the technology privately. It's stated in numerous sources that Microsoft does not intend to share this innovation with private citizens, but rather to really only use it for business purposes. I understand the need to protect, you know, trade secrets and ensure that companies can take advantage of their new products. And during my research, I did find one other company working on similar innovations with ceramics. But Microsoft is the only cloud giant that I found sharing recent breakthroughs and an intent to utilize the technology at scale. But does this mean that those who cannot afford it or do not do business with Azure are left to deal with ransomware as is? Should this technology not be shared with the mission of making ransomware an obsolete threat? Now, to the question I asked in the beginning of whether threat obsolescence is possible, I think that with the advent of technology like Project Silica, we can see how new innovations can make it significantly more difficult for threat actors to do harm. So if we have the technology but do not apply it to these cases because of proprietary reasons or requiring subscriptions, then perhaps making threats obsolete will rarely, if ever, be possible for the cybersecurity field. If that is the case, then where does that place us as students and future professionals? Do we advocate for this technology to be acquired and shared in a way that everyone can take advantage of it? Is it not our responsibility to do what we can to keep users safe? Ultimately, any technology that aims to support us in our security needs should be lauded as such. However, we cannot just accept this technology without asking some important questions. And one that I am very concerned with is how everything behind the curtain is regulated. Recently, Microsoft and other hyperscalers like AWS and Google have been scrutinized, and rightly so, for the type of data they use to train their AI models. We see this with multiple online libraries having filed suit alleging that these companies have used their IP in training various models. Another example where this type of training already happens is with CAPTCHA systems. These are used to verify kind of whether or not you're a robot before you can access a site. Those same systems are also used to catalog data, which is then used to train certain AI models. Personally, I don't remember the last time I got paid after proving I was not a robot. So I wonder if this is really fair for consumers in the long run. Now, in storing data on the Azure cloud with archival storage, I worry that Microsoft will have users kind of foot the bill to train their models. You know, how can we be sure that every time I go to access my family photos or work documents, that they are not using them to simultaneously train a new product? So up to now, I have discussed how obsolescence could be possible, but now I think it is important to kind of define what that would mean. So I leave you with a simple definition from Webster's, which says that something is obsolete when it is no longer useful or in use. So should new forms of storage like ceramics and glass integrate into our daily use, there is a real possibility that ransomware and other forms of malware will slowly arrive at this definition of being obsolete. However, being somewhat versed in cybersecurity, like many of you are, we know to be cautiously optimistic when hearing these solutions sort of heralded by private companies. Personally, I'm hoping that one day we can use this technology like this to protect users from threats and sort of cleanse our cyber ecosystem in a way that benefits everyone. But unfortunately, this may not come quickly, let alone without a big price tag that includes our private data. So this leaves me conflicted. And now I must ask again my question, but with a bit more clarification. So if threat obsolescence is possible, as we've discussed and I've given just one example of, how much are we willing to give to achieve it? And that's all I have this evening. Here are my works cited. And does anyone have any questions?
Thank you for presenting, Jacob. Our next presenter, Chamra, are you ready?
Yes, good evening.
Yes, good evening. Yes, good evening.
Echo.
Can you hear me?
Echo, echo, echo.
How is now?
There's an echo.
Oh God, I can hear it infinitely.
Yeah, I think now it's okay. Let me share my screen. Can you see my screen?
Yes, we all can see.
Okay. So my name is Chamra Ramukkunagi. Today I'm going to present how software engineering helps to improve the IT sector. Simply, we can tell that software engineering involves creating software solutions that fulfill specific user needs through design, development, and implementation. It's essential for managing large software system, managing cost, enabling scalability, and dealing with the ever-changing nature of software. So responsibilities and duties of software engineer are including developing, testing, and maintaining software programs, design new software solutions, and optimizing new for and optimizing them for speed and scalability. They are proficient in programming languages, platforms, and architectures, write code and create software application that meets the needs of a user and clients, collaborate with the other team members. I'm going to slide break. There are many reasons that software engineer is important. Those are simplifying. Simplifying is the complex software development process is a key goal of software software engineering. By implementing systematic methods and techniques, software engineers aim to make the development process more manageable and efficient, reduce expenses. By implementing systematic methods and techniques, software engineers can cut expenses, making the development process more cost-effective and budget-friendly. They achieve this by optimizing the use of resources, streamlining workflows, and reducing waste, reducing time. Following standard process and utilizing efficient tools significantly reduce the time required for software development and maintenance. This is including employee agile methodologies such as Scrum or Kanban to enhance collaboration and deliver incremental results. Large projects are managed efficiently. Handling massive projects requires efficient management strategies and collaboration among team members. This ensures smooth coordination and timely delivery of tasks. Point five is create reliable software. Reliable software is crucial for the success of any application or system. It means the software consistently perform its intended functions without errors or failure. I'm going to slide four. Software engineers is rapidly expanding in the United States and around the world. According to the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics, the number of job possibilities in software development is expected to expand by 22% by between 2020 and 2030, much exceeding the estimated national average growth rate of 8% for all professions. These figures point to a promising future for software engineering, particularly as new software development techniques continue to fuel the profession's growth. Software engineering significantly affect many fields such as software engineering significantly affect many fields such as cloud services, artificial intelligence, blockchain technology, and cybersecurity. Cloud services, among the many benefits of moving to the cloud, significantly cost saving, increased security, ease of use, increased flexibility, and the ability to seamlessly collaborate. Companies such as Facebook, General Electric, eBay, and Fitbit have already fully adopted cloud-based technology, which has motivated other companies to follow suit. Artificial intelligence. We see this in the form of voice assistant, chatbots, and other artificially enabled devices designed to make our daily lives more convenient. Artificial intelligence has allowed companies to automate tasks, perform complex analysis, and reduce human-made errors, among other benefits. Blockchain technology. Now that blockchain technology has proven itself in the world of cryptocurrency with Bitcoin and its dependencies, other industries are realizing its true potential. The strength of blockchain is that it establishes trust between parties using transparency and security, cybersecurity. Cybersecurity remains a top priority for companies that need to protect valuable data from hackers and cyber criminals. Cyber attacks are becoming increasingly innovative and sophisticated, which means security needs to be stepped up to defend organizations against them. Cybersecurity is likely to be a key part of the future of software engineering. I was involved in these Python developments where I created this simple calculator with basic functions. This is the place I got interested in software engineering. I was learning Python by going through some tutorials. I just added it to explain that even a child can go through these tutorials and can enter into this software industry. So this is how future is look like. Everything is automated. I have added my references here. Thank you, everyone. Is there any questions?
Thank you for presenting, Chamara. Our next presenter is Jonathan. Jonathan, are you there?
Yep, let me just get it set up real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
You guys see my screen?
Yes, we can see.
Okay, perfect. All right, so with this presentation, I wanted to build on the concept of patterns and how they are a prevalent resource within nearly all, if not all, applications of logic. So it'll be a little bit long-winded, so I won't be able to broach a lot of the more in-depth technical applications as I like to, but I consider this more of an introduction on the topic. So here we go.
Where's the music?
You gotta avoid that copyright. Just play it in your head.
Already went one step ahead of you there.
So the world around us is a complex masterpiece. All around us, a billion trillion interactions are occurring everywhere all at once all the time, which is a lot of stuff to have going on. The average individual has 50,000 to 70,000 interactions per day. This can include activities such as social interactions, conversations, work tasks, extracurricular activities, working out, the list goes on. That average to about 48 to the 14th power of interactions happening across the planet every day. To put that in perspective, the most powerful supercomputers today can only compute in the range of 10 to the 18th power of flops, which loosely translates to interactions in computer jargon. So in comparison, the strongest computers we have wouldn't be able to handle all the various actions happening. So what makes me wonder is, how does any of it hold together? How can we make the sense of anything if there's so much happening and changing? What keeps the world as we know it spinning on its axis without descending into chaos? Well, don't let your head spin around that too much, because there is rhyme and rhythm, and we find this beautiful order in patterns. Working behind the scenes, patterns quietly orchestrate the beautiful order permeating every aspect of our existence. These patterns, like microbial bacteria, quietly ensuring our well-being, operate involuntarily, providing a sense of calm amidst the bustling action of life. Patterns, a unique and distinct phenomenon, accompany us throughout life. often beyond our conscious awareness. Life pulsates with patterns, from the orchestrated movements of migrating, feeding, and breeding within animals to the subtle rhythm governing your daily experiences. Despite being introduced to the concept of patterns from a young age, we often overlook them, guided by the autopilot of our brains. Our brains, adept at filling in the blanks, tend to skim over these patterns, yet remarkably, they still diligently record and are able to recognize the patterns we observe. This phenomenon has fascinated thinkers throughout history, extending even to ancient philosophers who marveled at its intricacies. In the 13th century, the Italian mathematician Leonardo Bonacci ventured to India to deepen his comprehension of the patterns observed in nature. His time in India yielded numerous remarkable discoveries, his most prolific one being the Fibonacci method, which normally we would look at later in this presentation, but I'm cutting it out for the sake of time. Sorry to disappoint. But the most extraordinary aspect of this is the fact that patterns can be found everywhere we look. They are a logical, discernible regularity within a given system that can be observed in numbers, events, or objects. It can be a predictable sequence, arrangement, or behavior that follows the path of a certain logic. You can find patterns or the study of them in the fundamental levels of fields such as mathematics, science, art, and computer science. Consider language as an example. While there are over 7,000 known languages, the prospect of delving into linguistics becomes less formidable when you recognize the pervasive patterns that traverses them all. These languages, diverse as they may be, share a common origin, and the natural development of communications in our interconnected world facilitates the emergence of patterns organically. It is the identification and understanding of these patterns that significantly facilitates the process of learning different languages and many other processes. I mentioned earlier that patterns are all around us, most of the time undetected, but as you delve into certain fields, such as becoming a mathematician, a psychologist, or a data analyst, you begin to pick up on the patterns within that respective field. Essentially, what it breaks down to is that there are patterns everywhere in life, which is why, as you saw in my introduction slide, I have elected to call this phenomenon quantum resonance, which I'm sure it has a definition already related to the field of quantum mechanics. But in lieu of this internship, I wanted to recycle the phrasing and give it my own definition. Quantum resonance posits a nuanced understanding that patterns, as intricate manifestations, resonate dynamically within the multifaceted layers of our reality. Delving into the underscored interconnectedness of these resonating structures, asserting that our ability to discern and interpret them unveils a profound comprehension of the intricate symphony inherent in the tapestry of existence. Well, basically, that patterns can be found everywhere, and pattern recognition is the instrument that helps us see the deep connections in the world around us, like recognizing the simple yet beautiful melody in the complexity of life. Now that we have been able to recognize some patterns we see every day, let's go over the four fundamental principles of pattern recognition. Deconstruction is the first step, and it is the process by which information is broken down into small, more manageable parts. This involves analyzing the components and relationships within a system. Association is the second principle, which involves forming connections or associations between different elements based on similarities or shared characteristics. This links individual components to form a more coherent pattern. Abstraction, the third component, focuses on extracting these common features and characteristics from various instances to create a generalized representation. Abstraction allows for recognizing patterns despite variations. Categorization, the fourth and final step, constitutes grouping similar patterns or objects into categories based on shared attributes. Categorization simplifies the recognition process by organizing information into meaningful groups. We see an example of this in the way animal kingdoms are broken down into subcategories such as with vertebrates or without vertebrates. Since we are beginning to recognize patterns, let's look to see how companies have recognized and utilized patterns to their advantage. Consider when you open your local browser. You have the tab open and there's a menagerie of different pop-ups, news articles, and ads immediately on display. As soon as you click on the search bar, before you even begin to type a query, your browser is attempting to process your request. Autofill represents a list of potential search options, and as you begin to fill the void space, the list becomes infinitely more refined. Well, how does this work? Does Google just read your mind? Well, as opposed to popular belief, they do not. They just have an enormous array of data collected already from your previous searches. They are able to use this information to predict likely results you may want. What time of day you search, what words you use, what sites you visit, and what you linger over when exploring the internet, etc. All these micro interactions play a significant role in what a search engine will offer up to you for content. This is why you will see that every single person's personal web content is going to have a distinct variation from anyone else's because of the algorithms that cater specifically to you. There are specific tools on nearly every website known as cookies. These small pieces of data are collected and stored in order for these websites to provide better user experience and tailored content. While this raises a whole other concern with privacy, I won't divulge into that, but it's important to note that every instance you have on the internet is being recorded. While you may not realize it, you are following your own patterns that the computer anticipates for you to follow. We see the best examples of this on platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. These social media giants adeptly incorporate design patterns, meticulously shaping a cohesive and user-friendly interface that guarantees a seamless and intuitive user experience. Employing sophisticated algorithms, particularly in the context of scrollable feeds, these platforms curate content that is not only relevant, but also captivating. This strategic approach not only sustains user engagement, but more significantly fosters a continual desire to explore and peruse further. When it comes to content delivery platforms such as Netflix, they adopt streaming patterns that focus on optimizing streaming quality and ensuring seamless viewing experience. Google utilizes similar patterns within data centers. These patterns emphasize efficiency and reliability with content distribution. We see patterns like this play out over and over within these monster corporations as they find the most optimal ways to execute procedures, document results, and analyze data from that to rinse and repeat. In the case of more examples, I have notes upon notes on the content of each of these slides. There really is no end to the utilization of patterns in the technological world. I will skip over that one for the time, but I did promise you more on the Fibonacci method, so I'll touch on it a little bit briefly here as we see its application with the real world. First, we need to understand what the Fibonacci method is. So in short, it is a series of numbers where each number is the sum of the two preceding ones. We see this applied in financial markets. Fibonacci retracement levels are used to identify the potential areas of support or resistance. This is one of the most acute examples of patterns being used in the real-world application. Traders, in turn, apply the Fibonacci retracement levels by drawing lines on a price chart between significant price points. The idea is that after an uptrend or downtrend, prices are likely to retrace to a key Fibonacci level before continuing in the original direction. It can also be used to project potential future price levels. While this is a very cool application, it's important to note that it's not 100% accurate. However, patterns like the Fibonacci sequence can be used to make very accurate estimations for charts like those used in the stock markets. Exploring the intricate correlation within mathematics, we encounter three amazing patterns. The Penrose tiles, which are patterns that never repeat, tessellation, which is the art of repeating tiles, and fractals, patterns that perpetually self-replicate within themselves. We saw an example of this on the previous slide with the Mandelbrot set. Fractals, a commonly utilized pattern in technology, play a pivotal role in various applications. Consider image compression, where files can be compressed without any loss of quality, even as their size is reduced. Additionally, cryptography delves into fractal algorithms, leveraging the intricate and self-similar attributes of fractals to enhance security measures through key generation and encryption. Penrose tiles are also used within cryptography as well. The principles of Penrose tiling are utilized within the cryptographic algorithms to leverage aperiodic patterns for secure key deployment and exchange, as well as encryption processes that introduce elements of unpredictability. The mechanics of Penrose tiles can enhance the randomness of generated numbers in random sampling engines, a very valuable aspect for commonly used random number generators. Most importantly, though, Penrose tiles explore their reliability in communication and error correction codes, enhancing security by introducing non-repeating patterns for error detection and correlation. Tessellation plays a significant role in both architectural design and complex modeling. In the realm of computer-aided design, or CAD, a form of architectural design leveraging computer assistance for precision, tessellation is indispensable for achieving high accuracy. This is crucial in representing intricate architectural designs with meticulous detail, ensuring their accurate visualization and analysis. Additionally, tessellation finds use in more artistic designs that emphasize structurally sound and architectural elements. The application of tessellation extends beyond architecture to various technologies necessitating precise visualization or simulation, such as game development and virtual environments. In these contexts, tessellation is employed in mesh generation for finite element analysis, guaranteeing accurate representations of structures and systems in engineering simulations. This underscores the broader implication that pattern recognition holds in the real world. Architecture serves as just one example among many other operations that heavily rely on recognizing and understanding patterns. Computer application. Building out from the ground up, now we know that patterns are a foundational building block for mathematics, and those mathematical principles translate into the programming world. But let's get more in depth into how patterns really affect the computer world. Patterns in tech refer primarily to reusable solutions to common problems. They provide a structured way to design and solve these problems. Some examples include design patterns, which include singleton pattern, which ensures that a class has only one instance and provides a global point of access to it. This is useful in scenarios where exactly one object is needed to coordinate actions. An observer pattern defines a one-to-many dependency between objects so that when one object changes state, all of its dependents are notified and updated automatically. A factory pattern defines an interface for creating an object, but lets subclasses alter the type of objects that will be created. Within algorithmic patterns, we see divide and conquer, which breaks down a problem into subproblems, solves each problem independently, and then combines the solution. Dynamic programming solves problems by breaking them down into subproblems and solving each problem once, similar to divide and conquer, but it then stores the solution to subproblems to avoid redundant work. A greedy algorithm makes locally optimal choices at each stage with the hope of finding a global optimum. I'll also briefly go over the abstract patterns within the actual syntax of various coding languages. In object-oriented programming, the pattern revolves around objects, which encapsulate data and behavior. Objects then interact through well-defined interfaces and concepts such as inheritance and polymorphism. This enables code to be reusable and flexible. Concurrency patterns address challenges related to designing solutions for concurrent and parallel execution. This includes patterns for managing shared resources, synchronization, and communication between concurrent components. Behavioral patterns concentrate on communication and collaboration between objects. They define patterns of communication and delegation among objects to achieve specific behavior. Artificial intelligence is solely based on the concept of patterns, and it really is the meat and potatoes of pattern recognition and harnessing it. Patterns are the instruments used to chisel behaviors into AI models. Pattern recognition in AI involves the ability of a system to recognize and interpret patterns within data. This process is the backbone in the brain of AI and requires types of learning to implement it within the AI. For instance, supervised learning is when the AI system is trained on a labeled dataset where input is paired with corresponding output labels. The model learns to recognize patterns and maps inputs to correct outputs. In unsupervised learning, is where the AI system explores data without explicit labels. It has to identify patterns, relationships, and structures on its own. And within neural networks, it is a model that is inspired by the human brain, which is why it is able to excel at the pattern recognition. Deep learning models, are a subset of neural networks, are particularly effective in capturing complex patterns. Essentially, pattern recognition in AI is the most fundamental aspect that enables machines to not only make sense of complex data sets, but to learn from it and then to make informed decisions. So a big question is, will AI learn to think in tandem with the human brain? This is not as black and white as it may seem. Human brains possess a truly remarkable capacity to process information and recognize patterns, alleviating the need for generation of new thought. What this means is that our brain can reason through analogy. When confronted with new pieces of information, we can leverage existing neural pathways to seamlessly integrate and build upon these concepts. This is a feat that is very difficult to translate into artificial machine learning. Artificial reasoning predominantly relies on statistical AI, necessitating the creation of new nodes or neurons to improve its ability to process new information. This form of computing will often lead to the commonplace errors within the realm of AI, such as images with repeating structures, miscalculations and responses, etc. However, there is another approach to machine learning called symbolic computing, wherein the logic that the system comes across is recognized and stored in symbols to generalize similar concepts and rules. Combining the two concepts is the approach that brings forth the most human-like capabilities. This amalgamation emulates concepts, numbers, and data hyperdimensionally via vectors. These vectors, depending merely on how they are positioned, can convey vast arrays of differing data and structure via a deeply complex multidimensional method. They encode information without adding new nodes to the network, mirroring the efficiency of the human brain. They can be deconstructed as well to study how they arrive to their conclusions, and we can learn the patterns they employ by statistical AI as well as symbolic relationships. Before we get too taken away by these fascinating algorithmic applications and methods, let's look at what really turns the cog. I alluded to some earlier what really runs the world of patterns behind the scenes, and if you were paying attention, you know it's data. All the facts, figures, and information that is within the world or anything that can be collected, stored, and processed is data, serving as the bedrock for all information. When it is organized and analyzed, it becomes the most valuable resource. It can be used to gather insight, as we saw with big data corporations, who use it to make informed decisions based on collected data and use it to create top-of-the-line programs. As we explore this foundational topic, we uncover the transformative capability of manipulating patterns to optimize data analysis. These uses resonate across diverse domains, evident in significant applications like big data, particularly, though, in the field such as cancer research and various medical endeavors. Integrating data in medical research helps us accelerate advancements in clinical trials by identifying biomarkers for early detection. Discerning patterns in data can also vastly improve the understanding of disease progression. Machine learning algorithms applied to medical data contribute to predictive modeling, enhancing diagnostic accuracy and treatment efficacy, ultimately benefiting patient care and outcomes. These use cases surmise just a small part of the importance of organizing data effectively. Employing patterns like relational database normalization, hierarchy, and key value pairs within massive data sets, this approach emerges as a cutting-edge resource, empowering us to address significant challenges in the modern world. By streamlining programs and enhancing problem-solving capabilities, these patterns impact our daily lives, influencing entertainment, work processes, and the very fabric of the internet. The expansive role of studying patterns and data extends across the world from the foundational principles of mathematics to the intricate complexities of populating health data. It is a ubiquitous force shaping our understanding and interaction with the vast amounts of information that defines the contemporary era. I know I covered a lot of material in this presentation, so I included all the links that I used at the end of this presentation. I even added a few extracurricular ones that I drew some inspiration from and provide more insight onto this extraordinary topic for those of you who are interested. Now, in conclusion, the profound significance of patterns and pattern recognition in the realms of data and programming cannot be overstated. These inherent structures serve as the backbone of understanding, providing invaluable insights, facilitating efficient problem solving, and enabling the development of robust algorithms. As we navigate the vast sea of information in the digital era, the ability to discern, interpret, and leverage patterns becomes a powerful tool for innovation and optimization. Whether unraveling complex datasets, refining programming logic, or enhancing user experiences, the mastery of patterns unlocks a world of possibilities. Embracing the art of pattern recognition is not merely a skill, it is a gateway to unlocking the true potential of data and programming in our ever-evolving technological landscape. Cue the Star Wars music. It's a lot more epic if you really imagine it.
Thank you for presenting, Jonathan. Thank you.
No problem. Anybody have any questions?
Yes, go ahead.
No questions? Okie dokie. So here's some of the links for those of you who are interested. And that is all I have.
Okay. Our next presenter is Yo Quadio. I don't find your audio in this meeting for today. I'll move on to the next presenter, Kyla.
Hi, can everybody hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Cool. I'll go ahead and take over and share my screen. Give me just a second.
Go ahead.
Can you all see that?
Yes, we all can see this.
Fantastic. Okay. Welcome to my masterclass. It's over ChatGPT and AIs, why they're not a threat. We'll just go ahead and move on. Maybe. It's going to not break on me, and it's going to break on me. Oh, no. Okay. Whew. So we're just going to go over, I've got 6 parts in this presentation. I'm not going to link any videos. I basically did too much research and had to reduce everything down over and over again. So we're going to get like a reduced version because I'm supposed to fit this in 15 minutes. The first thing is we're going to go exploring on AI biases. We're going to look at hallucinations or how AI lies by accident, creativity or the lack thereof when it comes to how AI function, like what a lot of these scientists, computer scientists are calling thinking right now. And then we're going to go over what chat actually is, how they work. Next thing we're going to go over is a dilemma that we're running into in a macro view. I've named it the Ouroboros dilemma because it feeds in itself in a negative feedback loop and will eventually kill itself. I'll explain more when we get to that part of the presentation. And then the last thing would be things to actually worry about as far as like the ramifications of AI and things like that.
Oh my God.
Okay. So first things first, exploring AI biases. Most AI use data and that data has to come from somewhere. Because of this, there is an intrinsic bias built into most data, and it may need corrected. So there are a few different types of biases here. The first one I'll talk about is confirmation bias. And a confirmation bias in layman's terms is if a language model is trained in, let's say it only knows two things, like black and white, right? If we give it another color to work with, let's say pink, green, blue, anything, and we tell it to categorize these by like this thing, this color, it will put it in either black or white. That's a confirmation bias. It confirms an incorrect, under the wrong assumption, it confirms the incorrect thing, right? Next is a selection bias. A selection bias is a model trained on data from one region will evidently, what's the word I'm looking for? Will struggle to like do, how do I put this? A selection bias is basically data that's trained in something too specific. Like if I had a group of people between ages 1 to 100, and then I only selected the people between ages 20 to 30, when I ask specific questions about that age group, you're going to get very specific answers rather than getting from the entire population itself. So people in between the ages of 20 to 30 probably don't deal with Alzheimer's and dementia. So if you were to ask, let's say, Alzheimer's questions, you start getting a bias built into the system because there's an intrinsic bias in the like the scrubbing of that data. The next thing is called a temporal bias. Historical data perpetuates outdated viewpoints. Think if you had a system set up that could excise a new township and put real estate down and like basically dictate where local housing is going to go, business districts and municipal districts are going to be. You would have, and let's say you just set an AI to do it, which, like, don't get me wrong, we're pretty far off from anything like that. If it used historical data, something that we would have to consider is the fact that historical data is in the U.S. contains biases. If you guys don't know what redlining districts are, I recommend looking into them. But that would definitely be contained in the data lake that the large language models or these AI contain, and that would change how things would work. And redlining districts are inherently racist. So and unapologetic. And so in that way, you will get a bias based on historical data because that historical data was biased in the first place. The next thing is representation bias. There's a couple examples of representation bias. It's really easy. There used to be a face filter, I don't know if anybody remembers it, where you could like see the prettiest version of yourself, but if you ran your face through it, it would make you look whiter. That's because the sample size used a lot of white models. The CEO of the company even explained how that worked. This turned out to be a massive issue. And they had to rescind the face filter and retrain it because people felt really like personally impacted. And it also reinforced a negative diversity bias based on visual data that basically is trying to perpetuate the idea that the whiter you are, the prettier you are. And that's just not really how that works. Another one is the groupthink bias. I know I'm going through a lot of them, but these are all problems that are inherent into the AI system. And I'm going to pause after this slide. So if anybody wants to ask questions, I can't see the team's thing, so I'm only going to give it like a minute. But anyway, the groupthink bias is the best way to put it. AI models may generate content aligning too closely with dominant opinions, suppressing other paradigms and perspectives. The reason why that's a problem is incomplete and biased portrayal of information entrenches confirmation biases. So it's a negative feedback loop into the first bias we were talking about. There are a bunch of ways that we get around. There are a bunch of ways we get around confirmation bias and that kind of stuff. Lost my place. There are a bunch of ways we get around confirmation bias. And oh my goodness, all my notes just went poof. We have, because of the, because of the issues that we're having with biases, we have some things that are like trying to mitigate these issues. We have something called adversarial training. AI models are pitted against each other in order to reduce biases, seeking opposing opinions. Basically, you have one AI set up and another AI set up, and they argue. And you basically tell one AI just to play devil's advocate, no matter what. This helps get rid of any trained in data bias, which can help get rid of like confirmation issues and things like that. Data augmentation is another big way of getting rid of that kind of issue. Data augmentation is basically you put more data into the data lake that is more diverse on purpose. So if you notice that you have a group of 20 to 30 year olds, but your actual sample size of people that you're representing in these questions are in between, 10 to 100, you should probably pick 10 to 100 people, age group people, there are plenty of critiques of these mitigation techniques. They're not, a lot of people don't believe they're strong enough because adversarial training is good at doing two opinions, like two polar opposite opinions at the same time. But most problems are three-dimensional. They have more than two paradigms. So it doesn't cover the full spectrum of opinions all the time, or the paradigms themselves wouldn't be covered because the people inputting these issues in the first place may not understand how those work, those like the other opinions or perspectives, which that creates an issue with the AI as far as like what it can argue with itself over. Data augmentation selection bias is another issue, because if I'm the one allowed to put in data and I don't put in like the right data that I need in order to ensure that there isn't some kind of issue when there is data selection, I've inherently created a bias in the system. My favorite thing that I've seen so far about getting to like explaining how biases work and fixing them are the tools. We're starting to make tools that can get into these large language models and like explain how decisions are made. And then we can go back through and explain why, like, hey, we don't make decisions based on X, Y, and Z data points. So we can get better answers, which is like, I feel like the best way to go about it, just because this addresses the issue of the decision-making process and not so much trying to get the AI itself to fix itself every time. Which, like, I get it, but at the same time, you're looking at issues that may not be fixable without actually going in there and getting into the nuts and bolts of the AI itself to fix it. Okay, cool. Any questions? Like I said, I can't see the Teams thing the way I have PowerPoint pulled up, but if you want to say something, that's great. Okay. Hallucinations. Everybody knows about how AI basically looks at information when you provide it a prompt, right? And so we euphemistically call it a hallucination, but it's just a lie. The AI has the ability to say, I don't have this information, or I can't solve this problem. You can't, like, there are things that you can ask ChatGPT or a lot of the other large language models, and it will tell you that it doesn't know. So hallucinations are an issue that we're trying to figure out, because it seems like it's built into the system as how these large language models and data lakes work in their neural network. Because since they don't know the answers to questions, and like it can't comprehend an actual question, it spits out information that it seems like is the most true, which can lead to some terrible issues, and we'll get into ethical dilemmas later on. This is another reason why, when you look at the way AI is formatted and works right now, we don't really have to worry about it. I don't know if anybody's tried to use ChatGPT or any of the other ones to like code a program for you. It'll work, but it only works for like very simple programs. If it like gets anything above surface level amount of hard, or like a beginner coder or programmer hard, it starts to break, because number one, it can't communicate with your interface, and it also doesn't have the ability to be creative and then solve the issues that you may need it to solve. So because of that, the AI is just stuck at like coming up with the best information that it can, or fabricating an answer. And both of those things can lead to misinformation or out and out lies. And this is a huge risk, because it can generate false information, and people are using this stuff to do news and everything else like that, or spin media. There needs to be an ethical board on this kind of stuff sooner rather than later, I think. Another thing is creativity. Contrasting to human thought, the limitations of AI cognition are apparent. While AI has a large data lake and can formulate responses, with this information, AI never actually answers a question. It just regurgitates its given data after being transformed in a neural network. Now, some people will tell you, there's a scientist out there named Alan Turing, and he came up with like the Turing test for what is considered intelligence. And I'm going to explain that, I think, in the next slide. But part of that is like creativity, AI creativity versus human creativity are fundamentally different, because we don't expect an AI to like think and feel. But I would posit that the AIs that we're seeing nowadays are even less bright than what we're giving them credit for, because it is just a large language model. It's just got a better transformer in it, which has created this weird feedback loop of people thinking that this program has the ability to do way more and is way smarter than it actually is. So that's a huge issue. There are a few things as far as its creativity that I'm going to go over. That I'm going to talk about in the next slide, because I've already touched all my points on this one. Okay, so we're going to go over what ChatGPT actually is and all the other ones. So an application, a programming interface, or API, is a set of protocols, tools, definitions that allows different software applications to communicate with each other. It specifies how software components should interact, making it easier for developers to integrate various functionalities into their applications without needing to understand the internal workings of each system. So the reason why I read that definition off is because ChatGPT is much closer to an API than an AGI, or artificial general intelligence. Artificial general intelligence has never been a thing yet. We haven't come up with it. There are computer scientists out there with way bigger brains than I that are restlessly trying to get general intelligence to be a thing. And though ChatGPT and the other these other really awesome AIs that are out here mimic what general intelligence is. It in like no way follows the steps of becoming an intelligence of itself, because part of that is it has to think. It has to do something called transfer learning. Transfer learning, if anybody doesn't know, which I don't know why anybody wouldn't now that I say it out loud. Transfer learning is where if I teach you how to do addition, right, you can take that learned process and apply it to other places. Like 1 + 1 = 2. Okay, so you go over to the market and you buy 2 apples. Transfer learning is supposed to apply to a general intelligence. So as it learns, it can do more things, because that's part of general intelligence. ChatGPT can never be any smarter than what the data that it has been given is. The reason why they did that in the first place is because they need something called clean data in a data lake, which I think most of us have been through enough IT stuff to understand that like a dirty data lake will give you garbage in, garbage out. And they even let a version of chat like download like 4chan and a bunch of these other like really bad, not so great websites. And it turned into an issue really quick. So they ended up pulling it because it was a failed experiment. So yeah, there's a big difference between what these AIs are and the GPT clones are compared to what an artificial general intelligence is. And even by some definitions, which I'm going to say this is a bit of a stretch, but even by some definitions, what an artificial intelligence is. All right, so here's this little thought experiment that has been paradoxically like a pretty huge issue that nobody thought was actually going to be an issue. As the AI user base expands, the surge in demand unintentionally diverts traffic away from the internet, like the whole internet. We saw something to the tune of like 50 million new people getting on to ChatGPT alone. And what this does is it reduces traffic to websites on and search engines like Google. And so that takes away Google's ability to scrape data and make money. These websites' ability to gain any kind of monetary value by having a website, because they make money through either traffic or purchases on their site. And what ends up happening is this, it generates a negative feedback loop, because if nobody's making money, nobody's going to post new information, no new information, you know, the data becomes stale. And the end of this paradox is like the collapse, quote unquote, of the internet. I don't really think that's what would happen. But what I think personally would happen is we would get to this really weird point of not very much information being put out on the internet because there's no money, and AI dying, which we also don't want, because this PowerPoint isn't meant to like degrade or put AI down as like, oh, it's not actually that cool. This stuff is awesome, but it's just, you know, it needs to be taken with a big, you know, spoon of sugar, and we also need to put regulations in place. Okay, so there's some actual things that we need to worry about. So in the UK, there was this thing where the owners of OpenAI went to UK's version of the Senate and was like, you need to put regulations on us. And so they did. But the regulations they put on were, you know, in the favor of people, not in the favor of the people who own the companies. And they were like, we can't operate over here. You guys need to figure out how to like loosen this up, or we can't work over here. And this turned out to be a huge issue. They ended up breaking that law up and making something called a piecemeal law, where like every new AI that comes out has to have its own like governing body and laws made about it. which is going to become an issue quickly. We need to get into the ethical ramifications of AI. I think I have that as my next slide. And the synthetic, the perpetuation of synthetic information. Synthetic information is information generated by an AI and published as if it's fact. And we have a lot of that being sent around. There was even this whole thing with the SAG-AFTRA strikes, I think, where they were threatening to use AI instead of writers. But this gets back into the whole issue of how these things work in the first place. You can't just have a data lake spit out information, transformed information, and like not think that you're abusing a copyright law. So there's massive ethical concerns over copyright, how copyright works in trademark law and patent law. These AI companies think they can get away with it because of creative use, but in no way, shape, or form is any of this data being taken and being creative. Like, a machine is ripping this information apart and putting it back together. It's kind of like how some people will just read a book and then rewrite the book, but, you know, add a spin on it. Like, how a lot of people get caught doing plagiarism. Like, they copy the spirit of the paper, but they would have not had any of the information had they not read the paper first. So, and then they just didn't cite the user. There has to be ramifications to that. The artist that DALL-E and the other image generation machines are using, and the information that chat is using, those people need to be credited every time they're used in that data lake. Otherwise, those people are losing monetary value, or if they're in the academic field, losing the credit. Regulation is meant to protect people and people's property rights, including the copyright and trademark. The ability to scrape and aggregate data without consent is extremely detrimental to the people who contribute and will both disenfranchise and pull value out of their work, monetary or otherwise. Like I was just saying 3 seconds ago, AI is still useful. It can come in handy. We've had basically, I think, 3 masterclasses up until right now that have explained that in detail. So I feel like anything that I say is going to be redundant. So I'm going to say something and be redundant. Metadata and data aggregation can result in better data analysis. Because we have an absolute ton of data lakes everywhere, we can actually use those to identify problems as long as we have clean data and don't have issues like when they were taking pictures and trying to identify skin cancer, and like suddenly it was like this AI could find like 80% of skin cancer in people, but then they figured out that it was actually just identifying rulers in the photos because a dermatologist would be taking a picture with a ruler if they thought somebody had cancer. It also has the ability to do really complex mathematical problems with ease because it can do these procedural questions without an issue. And it's a good predictor of a lot of things. Like there's evidence of a guy using it in the stock market and using historical data to come up with better than 50% predictions and odds. And it assists with monotonous tasks. We use AI today for doing things like things that we just don't want to do because it's monotonous or boring. All right, thanks. My slides. And then I'm going to come back here. Are there any questions?
Excellent job, Kyla. Thank you for the presentation. So I'd like to conclude saying thank you for go ahead.
I was skipped over because my topic wasn't there, but I'm not sure why it wasn't on the list.
Oh, would you like to present now?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead, please. Sorry.
Share my screen. I think Kayla's screen is still sharing. Can everybody see?
Yes, we can see.
Right. Hello, my name is Jeremy Mitchell. My topic today is going to be on AI technology and game development now and in the future. First, we're going to talk about how AI affects game development jobs today. Today, relying on AI to create code is not the best option for an experienced game developer, but it can help someone who is unfamiliar with producing functional code for developing a game. AI applications like ChatGPT, GitHub Copilot, and Codium AI can produce decent code for games, but the user will likely have to go through a lot of trial and error to get fully functional code. No high-quality game development company is fully using AI to create their games just yet, but in the future, as the technology advances, I'm sure that there will be some sort of AI assistance not only in game development, but also in most technical organizations. AI code creation. AI products like ChatGPT, GitHub Copilot, and Codium AI are currently some of the top-of-the-line AI assistants that can help the user produce functioning code. To get AI to generate code, all the user will have to do is ask for assistance on a specific coding language and start asking questions. An example of a well-rounded question that would normally produce good code would be, can you create a script in C# that will allow an object to move with WASD controls? AI today will sometimes have issues figuring out what code is exactly needed for the situation, but in the future, AI will be able to generate many lines of code to fit any scenario and will be capable of recognizing and correcting any errors as well. AI voice acting. Text-to-speech has already started to become very advanced with today's technology. Some AI applications are capable of closely mimicking almost anyone's voice from text. With AI technology constantly advancing, text-to-speech will start to be able to speak many lines of text with different types of assigned emotion. Game developers will be able to use these types of tools for voice lines for their characters, which could end up saving them time and money on voice actors. I think in the future, laws will have to be put in place on AI speech tools to ensure the legitimacy of what is said from important individuals. I have already seen many AI tools available for use that can closely mimic current and past presidents and famous voice actors. If used incorrectly, these tools can spread extreme misinformation pretending to be a reliable source and could cause problems. AI 2D art. AI is already capable of creating top-of-the-line 2D art. AI-generated art can be used in video games in many ways, as backgrounds, characters, traps, sprite sheets, logos, weapons, and more. With the quality of 2D art being so high already, I can easily see people shifting to use AI to create 2D images for their games. In the future, it could save developers a lot of time and money on employees and resources. AI 3D assets. Today's AI tools can create 3D assets for video games as well. AI tools like Masterpiece Studio can create 3D assets that can be inserted into game engines like Unity or Unreal Engine with textures and the ability to have animations added on. The AI tools in use today don't create too high of quality assets just yet. As the technology advances, I'm sure some people will prefer to use these tools quickly to make an asset instead of taking hours to create one themselves. How AI will affect copyright laws. Since AI is still new and is just now starting to be introduced for common use, there are no copyright laws in place to stop any kind of duplicated work. As the use of AI increases in game development, problems might occur where AI will create the same or similar images, objects, or voice lines that users would think are original. This could lead to duplicate details and features in games in the future, which could bring issues with copyright infringement. The U.S. copyright laws only recognize copyright in the works created by a human being. This means that all AI tools are free of copyright for personal and commercial gain. As the technology advances and starts to become more used in technical businesses, new laws will have to be introduced. Here's a short video on AI being used to create a video game.
Artificial intelligence has had some huge advancements as of lately, and with the release of ChatGPT, an AI that can give programming advice, fix bugs, and even write code for you, it got me thinking. I want to put it to the test. I want to find out if AI can make a video game. So I signed up for ChatGPT, and the first order of business was to get all the game details. So I told it to give me a simple game idea that I can make with Unity. It told me that I should make a platformer where the player must navigate through a series of levels by running, jumping, and avoiding obstacles. There would be power-ups, collectibles, and enemies along the way. It also said to have environments such as a forest, cave, or city. I followed up by asking some clarifying questions such as the number of levels, the different power-ups, and the types of collectibles that can be picked up. So based on what it told me, the design will be 3 levels. However, ChatGPT's strong suits is text-based answers and doesn't deal with images. And of course, I need art for my game, so I had to find a solution. Luckily, OpenAI, the creators of GPT, have also made something called the DALL-E, which is perfect for what I was looking for. I can give it queries and it will generate various different images related to that query and be unique every time. And so the hunt began. After many attempts, I finally generated a player's sprite, collectibles, platforms, and enemies that would work. So with everything ready, I launched a 2D Unity project. I brought in the character and the grass platform, and it was time to test GPT's programming skills. I asked it to give me a 2D player movement script. The code that it gave me, I brought it in, and well, this isn't what I was looking for. I'm trying to avoid debugging the code myself as much as possible, so let's ask GPT what the problem is. So I went back to GPT and asked it to give me code to fix the tilt issue. So I ran the game again, and there's another issue. After having some back and forth, it finally gave me what I was looking for. This was starting to show me that it wasn't going to be easy as I thought. In 2D platformer games, the camera should follow the player, and so I went back and forth with GPT until it gave me something that I was looking for. And I also got it to use the jump sprite and bounce the player when I move around. Next up, I brought in the first enemy, and surprisingly, the code that GPT gave me for that enemy was correct the first try. I placed box colliders on the enemy, and so jumping on the enemy kills it. And when the enemy collides head on with the player, it kills the player. The level felt empty, and so I brought in some art and finished up designing the first level. I also got code that would add this bobbing effect for the collectible gems and update the UI when picking it up. I wanted to include at least one of the power-ups in the first level, so I brought in the extra health power-up and generated a finish flag to mark the end of the level where passing it will load the next scene. For level 2, it had told me to make it a cave, so I generated art for the background and platforms and wanted to bring in 2 power-ups for this level, where you need to use them to pass through the enemies. I told ChatGPT to add them to my existing script, and it was able to do this flawlessly. I added the power-up images to the UI and asked GPT for code to control the alpha value, having it so that it's fully visible when the power-up is picked up and transparent otherwise. With only one grounded enemy, the game is kind of easy. So I brought in a different type of enemy, and I was able to provide my existing enemy script to ChatGPT to modify it where this enemy would fly up and down instead. So I finished up level 2, and the game is actually starting to come together and become fun. Next up was to work on level 3. I went to DALL-E and generated a city background and storm platforms that would fit the theme. I felt like level 3 needed to be even more difficult, so I asked GPT if there should be a boss enemy, and it pretty much told me it's a good idea, so I went with it. With the enemy generated, it was time to get the code for the boss enemy, but this is where I encountered a lot of problems. I was trying to get GPT to give me a script where the enemy would move left and right, fly randomly in the air for a certain duration amount, and shoot fire projectiles. Having a combo back and forth, fixing one issue led to another. I tried breaking down the queries, but it was still having trouble understanding what my end goal was. So after a freaking hour of struggling to get it to work, I ended up scrapping the flying and giving it a simpler query where it makes the enemy move left and right, and followed up with it by telling it to add shooting projectiles. After finishing up level 3, I needed music for my game. So I found that OpenAI has something called the Jukebox, which is a neural network that generates music based on what you provide it. They have a site where they showcase what the AI has generated based on certain inspirations, and so I was able to find this track that can work with the game. For the sound effects, I found this site made by Google that uses artificial intelligence to combine 2 different sound effects together. I actually found this website watching this cool devlog on a similar topic made by Dev Banana, which you guys should definitely check out. With the soundtrack and the sound effects in the game was pretty much done. Though I wanted to ask GPT one last question, which was to name the video game. And out of the options that it generated, I felt like Realm Run sounded the best. So, can AI make a video game? It turns out the answer is yes,
but.
All right, now we're moving on to how AI will affect game development jobs in the future. With this type of technology constantly advancing, the future use of AI will only continue to increase in almost any business that uses technology. Soon, AI will be smart enough to complete almost any small technical task and will be able to be trained to complete large tasks as well. People fear that AI will take over their jobs in the technical industry because most repetitive and technical jobs are already starting to be able to be completed by a computer. AI is already capable of generating functioning code in many languages, and the technology is still in its early stages. In the future, AI will be able to easily generate any kind of needed code, so I feel like developers will start to move to AI assistants for less time and money needing to be spent. Future AI game testing. Since AI can compute at very high speeds, it is and will be a very useful tool for bug detection and game testing. The human error that comes along with finding design issues and errors in code tend to be high in today's game development organizations. It's rare today for a game to be released without some kind of problem. In the future, AI will be capable of playing through a game like a normal human would. This will be a very beneficial step in game testing because an AI will be able to play a game however many times to find any errors and give a high quality feedback. AI tools today are already capable of receiving information as if they are pretending to be a specific type of person with the needed knowledge. If a game was released for a specific audience, in the future, AI will be able to act as a targeted audience and perceive the game as so to give accurate feedback. Future AI script writing. Today, there are many AI script writing tools available for use as well. It is not a popular tool used in high-quality games, but in the future, it has the possibility to be widely used not only in the gaming industry, but in the entertainment industry as a whole. Also, when AI becomes more advanced, the developers will be able to fully integrate the technology into their non-playable characters around the created world. This will make it so players will be able to have unique interactions all throughout their gameplay. There are already test games being developed that show off how AI can be used as an NPC in the world that can be spoken to and have an intelligent conversation. My opinion. The future use of AI does concern me in some cases. I do like the use of AI in the gaming industry because with the added technology, people will have more time to add more details to their games. But on the other hand, there are cases where AI can be used in malicious ways and too extreme where it can harm society. The workplace world today is all about striving to make the most profit. If AI technology does become extremely advanced, I can see a lot of people in charge choosing to use AI over humans to save money and time. That's it for me. Any questions?
Thank you for presenting, Jeremy.
Do I think AI will replace mocap? The motion capture? I think it's a possibility, definitely. They can already make animations and stuff automatically transferred to objects. They can definitely make AI motion capture for video games, I would think.
So, do we have your audio here? He was the last presenter. Okay, I don't find him in this meeting. So I'd like to appreciate all the presenters for taking time to collect and share excellent information tonight. And for the graduating interns, all the best with your future endeavors. Thank you all and have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you.